Well, according to Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, the legacy of the pandemic will be a larger state. He told the employer's body IBEC last evening that this does not necessarily mean more taxes. He spoke to them about securing the dividend of the pandemic, including flexible working, occupational pensions for all workers, statutory sick pay, a living wage and clear regulations around tips, gratuities to benefit workers and customers. We can talk now to Mr. Varadkar, who joins us from our Dáil studio. A very good afternoon to you, Taoiseach.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for joining us on the programme. Before we come to some of this, can I get your reaction to what we've been hearing from the retail body, Retail Excellence Ireland? Because what they're saying this lunchtime is that the winding up of the pandemic unemployment payment needs to be speeded up in order for them to be able to address some of the labour shortages, acute labour shortages that they are experiencing at the moment. What do you say to them?
Well, I think it's important to say that the number of people who were in the pandemic unemployment payment at its peak was around 600,000. We're down to about 100,000 now. So, you know, we're seeing a big fall in the number of people receiving that payment. People are going back to work. Just got some figures on youth unemployment today, which were quite interesting. At one stage, 25% of people on the pandemic unemployment payment were under 25. That's now down to 10 or 11%. You know, big sign of younger people going back to retail and hospitality. I can understand where the employers are coming from. I know across the economy now, employers are finding it very hard to find staff. And one thing they would like us to do is to unwind the pandemic unemployment quicker. On the other hand, we're hearing from people who are still on the payment that their sector may not yet be fully reopened, like aviation, for example, the entertainment and arts sector, and also that they are finding some difficulties, often with issues like childcare, for example. So we had to balance the two sets of concerns, as governments always have to do, and we set out a schedule to unwind that payment between now and the early part of next year, and we're not planning on changing that.
Okay, and what about looking again at work permit arrangements, visas, that aspect of this?
Well, we are doing that, actually. You know, my department is responsible for issuing work permits. We issue a lot of work permits, and we've new legislation coming through to streamline that whole process and improve it. And we're just waiting on a report from the Joint Oireachtas Committee before we can take the next steps. But I do think one issue that employers are facing is that the churn of migration that we used to have has slowed down. You know, so a lot of people working in retail and hospitality would have come from Brazil or South America. A lot of others in that sector and others came from Central and Eastern Europe. And that kind of churn or flow of migrant workers has slowed down a lot because of the pandemic, because of travel restrictions, because of the non-availability of flights and so on. And I think that'll change. I think that will bounce back, you know, now that people can fly again in particular.
Of course, one group of workers who have continued to work throughout the pandemic are those in the front line. And we know they've been promised by the government, certainly frontline health workers, a bonus, a payment of some sort, some acknowledgement of the extraordinary, in many cases, efforts that they made to deal with the pandemic in hospitals and other settings. But there's a lot of confusion around this, I think you'd accept, in relation to what might be in the offing. You're going to talk to the unions on foot of that Labour Court recommendation. Can you give us any clarity on who will qualify for this when it is finally agreed?
Well, I should say, and I've no doubt you'll acknowledge this, is that people who were working from home mightn't have been in the office, but they were working. And a lot of people in my department, for example, were processing grants for businesses to make sure that they could survive. Same applies to the Revenue Commissioner, Social Protection, so many others. So, you know, what the government wants to do is we do want to recognise the work done by people in our employment, in the public service, who went the extra mile during the pandemic, who did heroic and extraordinary things. We think a reward is appropriate, but we have to work out the detail of that as to who it extends to, how much it would be, when it would be paid and in what form. And that work is really underway at the moment, being led by Minister McGrath, and it's really not for me to speculate on what that's going to look like, but we do intend to do it.
Are you equating a nurse who worked a 12-hour shift in one of our hospitals in full PPE, caring for some of the sickest patients in this pandemic. Are you equating them with people who, I'm sure, worked hard but continued to do their normal jobs, except at home in front of a computer?
Well, no, I'm not, actually. And, you know, I give my own medical background, I understand and appreciate the risks that people in the health service in particular took going into hospitals in COVID wards when there was a shortage of PPE and there were no vaccines. But even within the health service, there are going to be differences. You know, some people who worked in COVID wards put in extra hours, other people who were redeployed from one section of the health service to another, others who were in parts of the health service where actually activity was reduced. So, you know, even within the health service, that's not straightforward. And that's why we need to sit down and work it out with the employers and the employees, and that's what we're keen to do.
If I can turn to your comments to IBEC last evening, maybe just pick up on a couple. We can't, for obvious time constraints, discuss perhaps everything. But one of the things you mentioned was this notion of a living wage, which has been much discussed over many years. We have a minimum wage, but a living wage is something different. It's generally acknowledged to be higher, the amount of money that someone really needs to have a decent quality of life. What's your commitment there? How soon might progress start to be made towards bringing in a minimum wage that is also a living wage?
Well, I think the pandemic has changed a lot of things about our society. One thing we're going to do is we're going to build back our economy so that it's stronger than ever before, so that we have 2.5 million people in work by 2024, and we have a plan to do that. But we want to make sure that the new normal is a better normal. That we build back in a way that was better than before. And what I was talking about at the IBEC dinner last night was how we want to build a just society for working people in the workplace, and a living wage would be part of that. And we've made the commitment as a government to introduce it in the lifetime of this government. I've commissioned the Low Pay Commission to do some work on how it would be calculated in an Irish context and how it would be phased in. I'd expect them to have that work done for me in the next couple of months, and we can start to make progress in that in a meaningful way next year. Now, there will be an increase in the ordinary national minimum wage, if you like, in January, but a living wage is something a little bit different.
The increase in that case will be?
Not decided yet. I have the report from the Low Pay Commission, and we'll bring that to Cabinet in the run-up to the budget.
But will it be an increase that will just match inflation, or will it go beyond that?
Generally, when the Low Pay Commission calculates the increase, they have regard to a number of things, but inflation is one, and it would have been the inflation rate at the time of the report, of course, and it's gone
and
up since.
And inflation has picked up. So will people even see a situation in which the increase will maintain their earnings in real terms?
I suppose that's a roundabout way of asking me how much it is, but I think it's fair to say that the objective would be to protect living standards and to make sure that the minimum wage would increase in line with the cost of living, but also in line with the growth in wages across the economy more generally. And we have increased the minimum wage by 25% in the last couple of years. We have actually increased it faster than the rate of inflation. It was going up when inflation was zero, and we have increased the minimum wage faster than average wages have gone up, so we are a little bit ahead of that at the moment. Anyway,
okay. Just a couple of other things before I let you go. The continuing debate around the corporation tax here moves towards a minimum 15%, which the OECD is recommending. You were saying this week that the result could be two rates of corporation tax: the higher one for the very biggest companies and 12.5%, the current rate for smaller firms. Now, Pascal Donoghue has said that he'll have to talk to the European Commission about that. Were you jumping the gun a bit here? Are we still a long way from any kind of a deal being done in that regard, two rates?
Well, there isn't a deal done yet. So this is hypothetical, of course. We would rather be in the tent than outside it. We'd like to be part of any international tax deal, but we need to make sure that it's in line with our own interests as a country. The proposal that is on the table now, which is the OECD proposal, proposes that it would apply to companies with a turnover of over 750 million. So that's the current proposal on the table, that it would only apply to companies with that level of turnover, 750 million euros a year. But that's not agreed yet. You know, that is still under negotiation.
But to have two rates, if that were to be the result of this, that would require European Commission approval, would it?
It would. Now, we have two rates already. There's a 12.5% rate, which is the general rate, and then there's a 25% rate that relates to financial services. So you know, we do have two rates already, but we would envisage that if we can come to an agreement on an international level, that would then have to be underpinned by a European directive. And one thing we're saying to our partners in the European Union is that if there is an international agreement, the European Union should stick to that, shouldn't try and gold plate it, shouldn't try and make a difference to the international agreement, if you like. So if, for instance, 15 is what's agreed on an international level, that should be the EU rate. It shouldn't be higher.
Just a final political question. The government's Dáil majority, Mark McSherry, now has lost the Fianna Fáil whip. Of course, you lost the Fine Gael seat in the Dublin Bay South constituency. It's now held by Labour. Are you concerned about the government's Dáil majority for the remainder of its lifetime?
No, we have a majority. We still have a majority, notwithstanding having lost those two members. And I think you can see from the confidence vote in relation to Minister Coveney, where we won that vote by 90-something to 50-something. You know, there are a decent number of independents who are sensible people and will back the government when we're doing the right thing. So I think we're in a strong place to last the term, and that's certainly what I expect to happen.
You'll be more dependent, though, on those independents?
Well, we're not yet. You know, we have a majority without them at the moment, but we have a number of independents who are broadly supportive of the government if they feel we're doing the right thing by the country and the right thing by their constituents, and that helps us to get to a position where we haven't actually lost any votes in the Dáil, or at least none that I can recall.
Donáiste, Leo Varadkar, thanks for talking to us here on the News at One. More after this short break.